Check, check, check. All right, welcome to Chatting Between Takes. You know, we'll see how this one goes, because I got a lot going on today, so I don't think I'm going to record much of this one, but I really wanted to jump in right into an idea. And the idea kind of has to do... Okay, it starts with the streetcar idea, because I've been... For whatever reason, I've been driving routes I'm not used to. Partly because I'm working on a different set, it's over west, and there's less streetcars out of the core. So I feel like I've been behind buses a lot. So you know my rant about streetcars, which I'll summarize, they're a fucking joke. Because if you don't have streetcars in your town, they run in the middle lane, not the right lane, of two lanes of traffic. And when you've got rush hour... you can't ever get by them because there's so many people on transit that every time they stop and open their doors, you can't pass on the right. It's illegal. So you're just moving at the pace of a fucking streetcar. And when there is parked cars, i.e. non-rush hour, you can't really get by either. So traffic becomes this insane race for like one person every three lights to get by the streetcar. I have fucking no idea why there's streetcars. Now, I've been behind buses a lot is my point, because when you get out of the core, it's more bus routes. And I'll tell you, mommy took a bus ride, now she got a bus out, everybody ride her just like a bus route. I don't know if she took a bus ride, mommy took some kind of ride. Anyways, Chatting Between Takes mug, I know Emily, you're going to know that one. So, the buses, even if you're on a single lane, you still have a pretty good chance every two or three stops of getting by the bus. It pulls a little out of the way, you wait till there's nothing oncoming, and you go around it. In other words, what I'm trying to get at is my deep belief that streetcars are fucked, stupid, lame. Let's not even get into all the construction woes in Toronto. Companies screwing up, costs, businesses getting shut down because roads that were supposed to be worked on for like a month ended up being worked on for a year. So now the business on Queen Street, let's say, has no traffic in front of it. Nobody's driving that route. Nobody's pulling over to grab a coffee and then walk into the business. Like actual fucking economic bullshit. Delays, overruns, etc. So this is my belief. These things suck. Then I get behind a bunch of buses and I'm like, okay, so I'm right. When you're behind a bus, traffic goes way better, seemingly for all the cars and the bus. Now, here's the thing. The only argument I've ever heard in favor of streetcars is they're electric, so they're saving a bunch of pollution. And to put buses, you need a different wiring system, so you're basically going to have all those same kind of problems, blah, blah, blah. That would make sense except for this. You can't look at it on a micro. You gotta look at it on the macro. Now let me go to this one. There was an article recently that a woman wrote about how we're living in a pedophile culture. Now, the only evidence this woman gave for this, and I mean actual evidence, like statistics, aside from going, well, guys make a face because my legs aren't shaved. Well, I'm sorry, but that doesn't equate with me wanting to fuck a 13-year-old. And by the way, I don't care if women don't shave their legs. In my experience, women care more if their legs are unshaven when I want to touch their legs. I don't give a fuck. But that's a different conversation. But the point is, the only statistic she gave is Pornhub 2014 and 2015, the most searched porn tags was barely legal / teen. Now, first off, any teens are legal, and barely legal is just a title. They're legal. There's no pedophilia involved, period. Also, my belief is, if you're looking for that stuff, it's because porn stars get pretty spent pretty fast. And that's a fact. That's a shitty fucking life. You're just getting fucked all the time, and you can't pretend that that's healthy in any way, that you're doing that for real long. So, if I've ever looked for younger girls, it's because I don't want to see a woman who's just fucking, like, spent and just an old pro. And that's just how it is. It's the same with the strip club. And by the way, it's even the same with me as an actor. Ah, we know Sean. We want someone fresh. We all, you know, whatever. So I don't think that's about youth as much as it is about untainted, which I guess is part of youth. However, my point is this. So on Pornhub, yes, 2014, 2015, the most searched statistic was barely legal slash teen. This is the micro that this woman's pointing. It's the only bit of evidence other than her own anecdotal whatever. And it makes her point, if you don't actually go fucking look at the statistics, because if you actually go look at the statistics, by about 2%, barely legal beats out lesbian, which is a slim victor over number three, which is MILF. That's mothers I'd like to fuck. That's not 13-year-olds I'd like to fuck. And then mom and stepmom. I might have the order of those wrong. So when you look at the macro, the aggregate, so if you go, oh, the top 10,000 searches are barely legal, that might seem like a good point. But when you pull the camera back and you go, right, but what are the top 70,000? Well, 60,000 of them are all either no male involvement with the lesbian or older women. So by a massive margin, people want to see no dick penetrating young women or older women. But again, that doesn't make that woman's point. This goes to the streetcars, because yes, a streetcar versus a bus, yeah, that's your 10,000 people looking for barely legal. But what about the flow of traffic and every combustion engine behind the streetcar taking an extra 20 minutes to get where they're going because of streetcars belching all that smoke? I promise you on my fucking life, that is a greater difference than the supposed benefit of the electric streetcar versus the combustion engine bus. And again, this is where sometimes we got to pull the camera back. What point are you trying to make? What statistic are you going to use to make it? And again, in this fucking Donald Trump culture, you just got to say something. And as long as you are speaking from your gut and your heart, people like that more, because Rex Murphy wrote this great article about none of this is Donald Trump's fault. It's America's fault. And by extension, a little bit Canada's, because we have our fucking Ford brothers up here. Because look, Ford's the same as Donald Trump. He doesn't know shit. He's unqualified. However, he speaks like he hasn't prepared a statement. So we're so used to sanitized bullshit, vacancy that supports basically, you know, an existent economy that doesn't help generally the people who need it the most. And then there's all this weird talk around it. No one's ever honest. So other than the fact that Donald Trump's a fucking idiot, everything he says, he at least kind of means in the moment. He doesn't care if he contradicts himself. He's not minding his P's and Q's. By the way, this is one of the big complaints that people do have about Obama, which is he seems like a robot. Where's the passion? And it's funny how we're in a culture, look, Obama's not perfect, but we're in a culture that wants to say fuck you to a good president who's done a good job because we don't see him get like flamey enough. And then we want to get someone who's been bankrupt four times, who's been divorced three times, but then talks about the sanctity of marriage or whatever. You know what I'm saying. Blah, blah, blah. The hypocrisy, the ridiculousness, but he means what he says, even if he means something different 10 minutes later. I actually can relate to that. I get that. I don't want to hear a fucking computer, you know. I want to feel something. I want to be excited. And that's part of the deal. So we're in this culture that I can relate to that would rather care about fire and blah, blah, blah than actually what is better. So we'll use a macro idea and diminish it to a micro statistic, because we'll go, oh, we're in a pedophile culture. And you're like, okay, well, there's got to be something good to support this. And then it's like one statistic that's actually wrong if you take the second to click on the link she provides and go, wait a minute, there's a lot more older women being coveted here, or at the very least, wanked off to. You see what I'm getting at. And that, for me, is streetcars. The fucking tangible benefits are so outweighed by the tangible disadvantages that it's crazy to me that we still have these fucking things. And by the way, can we have a little progress? Like, can we have a little progress? You know what? I believe that Toronto's going to go to some pedestrian-only streets downtown. I love this idea. I love this idea. It's just great. It's Euro. It's fucking progressive. It reduces traffic. It reduces congestion. It brings vitality. People walking are far more likely to support local business. All that kind of thing. It's great. So, put a little trolley on the walk-only street, and we'll call it the 1880s technology ride. And we'll be like, hey, ba-ding, ding, and a good day to you, sir. And, pardon me, madam, shall we to the trolley? And do that down on one of these pedestrian trolley-only sort of Euro walking streets, and then have actual, viable, reasonable transit for 2016 level functioning on this globe. That's what I'm saying. Hey-oh. Now, you know how I feel about streetcars, but really, the bigger thing for me is when we choose our statistics to make our point, well, we all do that, right? We all do that. But, well, that's my thing with speeding tickets, right? Is that nobody seems to care about the actual statistics. We just feel safer. Oh, I like streetcars. Do you, though? Do we, though? Do we? I won't name them, but I was out with a couple friends, and one of them was talking about their third roommate and going, oh, we love them. And then there was a little bit of a pause, and then the other roommate went, yeah, but do we? I thought that was the best. Because, you know, that standard thing is to be like, oh my God, we love them. Oh yeah. It's like, yeah, do we though? Like, let's actually think about what it's actually like to actually live with that person. You know? And that for me is one of those things where, yeah, let's reevaluate, you know? Hell, I'm cleaning up my basement right now, and the number of things I'm just evaluating. Like, do I actually need this broken toaster? How many broken toasters are we living with? So, while I'm talking here, I want to pull up this Facebook article that I really, really dig. And it's five sort of checkpoints. It says if she doesn't answer five, if you don't get 5 out of 5 thinking of her, and by the way, obviously women, this goes for you too, then she's not the one. This was on Elite Daily. Okay, love's complicated. How do you know if the one you're with is worth spending your life with? Here's sort of a checklist. I'm just going to skip to the major points. So you can find the answer through a few simple questions. Obviously, I ran the checklist on my girl. Has your life drastically improved since you met her? Are you happier? Do you have a better outlook on life? Do problems seem less dire and more manageable? Do you have more good days than bad days now? If all of this is true, she may very well be the one. Well, for me, that's a check. Oh, but I shouldn't go through that. I'm not trying to boast about my relationship. I just think that's a great question. If my life's not better since I met the girl or the guy, well, you know what I'm saying? And they're not going to change, right? And here it says, we tell ourselves things will get better, but we know that's just wishful thinking. Do you smile every time you see her, think of her, and talk of her? Obviously, every time, meaning 97% of the time. Fuck yes. Come on now. I mean, seriously. If I'm thinking of my... Oh, there's a great one I saw about cars. That if you don't look back every single time you park it, it's not the best... It's not your car. I can't remember the exact meme. Like, when I park my Porsche, and then I walk away, I don't just look back every single time. I sneak away at meals just to look out the window and look at it, you know? And that's when you know you've got something you like. So if I'm talking about my girl and I'm like, or this or that, can you, this is number 3, can you talk to her for hours on end without getting bored or feeling awkward? That one's pretty straightforward. I mean, if you're not fucking, then you're just coexisting because... Look, let's be honest. Anybody who hasn't experienced major sexual trauma to whom you're attracted is going to be a good lay. The attraction's why, right? Like, there's people I'm not attracted to. They're not attracted to me. It could happen, but come on. There's enough people who you just feel it. So barring, you know, issues, that should just be great. But aside from that, we're not doing that 24/7 unless you're the aforementioned porno star. So, I don't know. If I'm not excited, if I'm not looking back when I park it, whoa, as an actor said to a bishop, you know what I'm saying. So when I'm sitting around chatting with my mates, is she there for you? Like this one. Is she there for you? Is she there when you need her to be? Or does she just hang out when it's convenient? And number five, has she opened up to you and let her into your life? Obviously, for me, that's one of those things that's both emotional and actual. You know, when Emily and I first started dating, we hit on a couple bumps because I felt like she was keeping me separate from her actual life. And then when I asked her about it, she said, yeah, I was, or I am. That was a problem. I was an adult male. I was not going to fucking let somebody, you know, you think I'm going to let, what? I don't have enough self-respect to go, well then, go do that thing. Because while I don't need every set, last night's a perfect example. Em goes out with friends. She's like, you want to come? I'm like, not really. I get the text, we're going to be later. I don't need to text her back. All good. They go out. They go to a bunch of clubs. They do all the thing. She comes home and I'm just fucking happy as fuck. She had a great night. And then she's like, what'd you do? And I was like, well, I read a book and I made some peppermint tea. And I went and sat with the neighbor by the fire. And he was having a party, but everyone had left. So he and I just sat and talked. And what was great was I was so fucking turned on by Emily's night. And she looked at me. She goes, I'm so fucking turned on thinking of you here in solitude, just like being a man. There you go, you know? We don't need to fucking cling up each other's assholes. In fact, I think spending too much time together is a problem in a relationship. Probably because it means I can't be alone. And that means I'm not offering what I need, and then I'm going to start getting irritated by the other person. But really, again, it's like, you know, in those early days, I wasn't being let into her life. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm not like that. And you know, whenever we have troubles, it's sometimes a version of that. Because remember, these notes don't change a lot, right? Like, we're 5 years in and we're 5 years plus, right? So if we're hitting upon the same stuff as 5 years ago, then that's a part of her that I have to accept if I'm going to love her the way I believe I do. So if I have some secret hope that she's going to change, I'm the fool. People don't change. I like that checklist. Nothing's 100%, but 97% of that checklist makes a lot of sense to me. And by the way, I would do that for friendships. Oh my God, I love that person. Right. Really? When do you hang out with that person? When do you go out of your way to spend time with that person? You might just be paying lip service because you think you should love that person. Oh, they're so great. Okay, well, how come I never see you and them making a date to do anything? That person might not be as great as you think. They might be a nice person to have a drink with once in a while, or is what we used to call before social networking, an acquaintance. Someone you run into and have a good enough feeling about that you don't need to exit the conversation. That's all that ever was. It never needed to be a quote-unquote friend. I think of how many friends I have who I don't see or talk to. And that's just the deal, you know? Like, that's the reevaluation today, without judgment. That's one of the other things I read in this book last night, is when we attach emotional, like, relevance to our thoughts, then that's the human suffering, right? So if I think, oh, Emily's out with her friends tonight, that's just a thought. If I think, oh, she might be out dancing, that's just a thought. As soon as I start to go, why doesn't she dance with me? Wait a minute. What if one of those guys likes her? Now I'm getting into jealousy. Now I'm getting into fear. I'm attaching this emotionality to a thought. And then usually that doesn't stop at one layer, right? Usually that spirals into, I'm getting old and I'm going bald and how fucking dare life and this and that. And I used to be more successful and blah, blah, blah. You know that loop I hate that I'm moving away from. You see what I'm getting at is that's a great way to basically stay cycled in my loop, because that emotionality feels like justification. It becomes justification. Well, I don't want that. I just don't want it, you know? I want information just to be information. I was chatting with my friend Trevor last night about a certain sales idea. You know, and we were basically, and you know, my karate teacher and I talk about this too, no answer is an answer. So if I talk to someone and I go, hey, you know, I think it'd be, well, the perfect example is the acting, you know. If I don't hear back from a part I auditioned for, I'm hearing back. They don't want me for the part. I don't need my agent to call. You know, I'm working on that this year. I'm working on accepting that no answer is an answer. If I send out 10 emails to meet with managers and one responds, there's no reason to pursue those other 9. It's just going to fucking create anxiety. And then when I meet with number 10, I'm basically going to shortchange the yes of that. Like my LA experience, though, I don't have to go with number 10, but I have to accept that the other 9 aren't it either. You know, and that was what I was talking about in the last podcast about. I can say no even if I only seemingly have one option, because just like no answer is an answer, choosing nothing is a choice, i.e. an option. And now the fear is, well, what do I do then? So I get offered a role I don't want to do. Well, what if I don't do it? What does that mean? I'm not an actor? Does that mean I'm not whatever? No, it means I didn't want to do that role. Now, that might mean I have more space. That might mean I have less money. That's again, just information. And hopefully I can detach the emotionality from all that. And that's what's interesting about something like that checklist, about whether it's an automobile that you know I'm passionate about, or obviously my love, or my friendships, is can I answer that without emotionality? Can I answer that without the answer needing to be what I want it to be? Just like, you know, that woman needs to prove her thesis that we're in a pedophile culture. By the way, I'm in no way arguing that we covet youth to a ridiculously silly degree. I just think there's a big difference between youth and pedophilia. And I think not acknowledging that difference is, it's just bullshit. You know, it's like, it's the idea that everything's a slippery slope. Some stuff just is where it is. Everything's a slippery slope to something, you know? If I have one cigarette, is that a slippery slope to smoking? Or is that a slippery slope to quitting smoking? Which is it? Now, it doesn't have to be just one thing, but not everything's negative because it could later one day be something. You know, every single person who has a beer is on a slippery slope to crack cocaine. So, you know, do we never allow slippery slopes, or do we just go whatever? So the idea that we like youth, and by the way, a lot of that's biological, right? Because women do have a biological clock that men don't. And somebody will go, well, that's a bullshit argument. One of the 3 characteristics we admire in women is maturity and youth. And why is the maturity not acknowledged? Well, it is. Look up how many people want to fuck a MILF. It's in the name, MILF. Mom, I'd like to fuck. So apparently we value both. That's the point. We do value both. To say it's just youth and therefore pedophilia is just wrong. It's just wrong. However, this goes to what I was saying in the other thing, which is the advertising is based around the newest, right? Like, you look at Porsche World and people value, you can buy the new GT3 RS for cheaper than you can buy the 2011 GT3 RS. Fact, that car is only 5 years old. But it's considered such a brilliant vehicle that the resale on it, had you bought one in 2011, you'd sell it for double, if not more, what you paid for it. So, you know, that would have been a better investment even than a house in Toronto. You don't always know it, you know, and there's a limited number. That's part of the reason, blah, blah, blah. The point is that Porsche is not advertising a 2011 GT3 4.0 RS. They're not doing it because they don't benefit from that. So they're advertising the newest. And that's the same as any level of you want the new this, you want the younger that, you need the new whatever, whatever. If we can't recognize that that's not necessarily a function of pedophilia, but a function of we're going to be sold something, And there has to be enough turnover so that the business model is viable. If I made a car that never rusted, never broke down, never whatever, I could only sell it to you once. And by the way, never improved to make the old one look obsolete. It's a bad business model. Might be great for the planet, might be great for our spirit, but it's not great for business. Wow. So what are we learning? Nothing. But what are we learning? Business is probably not good for your spirit, probably not good for the planet. Probably not good. Well, you know what I mean? Like, and if you take Michael Moore at his word, I mean, think about bankers, you know? I mean, what did they do good for this world? But they're the most highly recompensed, and they get the bailout. You know, it's interesting, because Iceland let the banks fail, prosecuted the bankers, and then bailed out the citizens. Whereas America let the bankers all retire with $50 million plus golden parachutes, said that's the way to attract talent, even though they destroyed a global economy. And then all the citizens who were left holding the bag, well, we needed to bail out the banks because they're too big to fail. If they're too big to fail, they're too big to exist. I'm stealing that from Bernie Sanders. These are common sense ideas, but you need to travel outside of your sphere to realize it. Because if you go to a place like Sweden and you break your ankle and then you're fucking freaking out because how the hell are you going to pay the $20,000 plus US to fix your ankle, but you need your ankle fixed, so you do it anyways, and then they go, there's no bill. What do you mean? There's no bill. No, it's called healthcare. We take care of each other, and you kind of go, oh, well, why can't we do that? Well, you can't do it because, well, I know why I think, because of money and politics. Because when you have money and politics, everything's bribed, right? Like, it's just a fact. It's just a fact. Imagine if I was running for an election and I said, by the way, you don't have to pay taxes. And by the way, you'd vote for me. You know what I mean? Like, you'd just vote for me. And then somebody else goes, no, you have to pay taxes, maybe even a little bit more. But trust me, it's going to be better in the long run. You're probably not going to vote for that person, especially once fear comes into the equation. I'm not saying that that means that politician's always the right one. But I saw this page talking about the dollar dropping and saying it was like a fuck Trudeau page, one of these right-wing pages. And I'm like, the dollar's not dropping because of Justin Trudeau. It's because the conservative government propped up the whole country on oil while not, like, Alberta wasn't taking any tax for the oil. So there was no, like, let's create an infrastructure. There's even a story in the Bible that you have 7 years of, like, amazing shit, during which time you need to fill the granaries for the 7 fallow years. It's the oldest tale, or one of, that there is. And I had to learn this because I went broke in my 30s because I didn't understand that fallow times could come. So Alberta's high on the hog. And then our conservative government, both provincially in Alberta and president or prime ministerially, they go, yeah, let's make our whole economy about oil. Well, all eggs in one basket. Again, one of these old wives kind of things. Because if you drop the basket, you lose all your eggs. Well, as oil prices get adjusted, lower, our economy tanks. That's all nothing to do with Trudeau. It just isn't. Well, I'll be curious to see how he manages it. That will be on him. You know, whatever. That's part of what he has to deal with, and he chose that job, and let's see what he does with it. That's on him. But that this has happened is not. Sorry. It's just not. That's like blaming the economic crash on Obama because, you know, when he got in, the economy was in the tank. That wasn't on him. That was part of a free fall that started under a conservative government that deregulated and said, we don't need to collect any taxes or help our citizens because that's tyranny. Jesus Christ, I guess I can't say that I am in the middle. I'm just not in the middle. I'm tired of fucking pretending I'm in the middle when lack of common sense and idiocy are starting to prevail, you know? And it's like, I feel a bit like Picard or Winston in 1984, where it's like, hey, there's five lights. And it's like, no, there's four lights. Now, you pay for insisting there's four lights when you know there's four lights, because it'd be a lot easier to just go along with it and go, oh, yeah, no, we're being attacked by terrorists. So, no, now, yeah, now. How many more terrorists are there now than there were before Iraq invasion? A lot more. So that worked, right? Good thing that war didn't cost anything, though. Wait, did it? So, yeah. So now you got... But here's the thing, is it loops, right? So now people invested in war, invested in fear, get to go, hey, look, you're going to be attacked. Nobody goes, right, but it's because we're a war culture that we've actually, like, 100-folded, or if not 1,000-folded, the number of people who want to attack this country, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, but they win, right? Because now there's more money for war and less money for social services. And that's really what I'm getting at with the Alberta thing versus the Norway thing, where they had the oil boom and they invested in their goddamn culture. And guess what? You're safer when people are more educated. You're safer when people don't need to fight all the time. You're safer when you have a healthy community that isn't going into debt to pay for whatever. Everybody benefits. Everybody benefits. And then guess what? Everything's technically cheaper because you're not paying for everything. But again, if you're rich, you don't mind paying $9 for bottled water. If you're worth $100 million, you don't care what anything costs. Healthcare is expensive, give me the concierge service. But if you're an average person, yeah, don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. And again, I'm not promoting any political party. It's just a way of thinking. I'm fucking tired of this idea that, like, oh, we're in danger, so we need to divert all our funds. It's like fight or flight, right? You're convinced daily by the news, daily, depending on your Facebook feed, that your adrenaline all needs to go to your quadriceps and your glutes. And what that means is that you have no extra energy for your digestion, for calm, for higher level thinking. When you're in fear, your frontal cortex isn't working. It's just your snake brain. So when daily the news is telling you you're in trouble, daily the news is telling you the economy's collapsing, daily the news is telling you this, you're firing in a way that your gut, right, where you can either have peace or stress, is going to get stressed. Your brain is basically shutting off, and your response is, let's get those guys, you know, or let's cower in fear and hope the strong guy takes care of me. This is base level shit, but we have these mini versions of, like, it's basically an adrenal drain every day when we listen to this shit and when we're peddled this shit. And again, no newspaper, no news channel, no news feed, no fucking Huffington Post or Washington Post benefit if there's no news that day. So, hey, Sally watered her lawn, no news. Sally got murdered on her front lawn, and so might you. News. But now your adrenals are kicking in. Now you're afraid. Now we're all just going to the big muscles, the military might, the fuck the refugees. But we're not actually in that place. We're choosing that place, and that's it. Is that we're choosing it, and it's our responsibility. And that goes back to what Rex Murphy was talking about. Is it ain't Trump, it's you. Or is it you? Is it you? Because again, I talked about not just him, but anybody. Hillary, Bernie, anybody. If you quote something in a debate that is fact-checked to be false, there should just be a blackout on it. That would be responsible to ourselves, to our children, and by the way, our inner child. You know, I grew up in a household with smoke. You know, my mom smoked the whole time I was growing up. Well, we know now that's not a good idea. By the way, we knew then too. So, I can now self-parent and go, but I'm not going to do that. Now, the flip side is, why do I know about all this shit? Because I'm feeding it. Why do I rant all the time or care? Because I'm feeding it So maybe I'm doing the same thing. But guess what? Not much of a podcast if I just get on here and go, life is good. You're good. I'm good. Or isn't there? Isn't there? Well, it goes back to the last known position idea. There isn't if that's not actually how it is. But if it is how it could be, then we start from last known position. And as I see it, last known position is that, generally speaking, I'm seeing this fucking fear loop that rewards a bully because we perceive that as strong or real. There's nothing fucking real about that man. By the way, when he basically raped his wife, who later retracted it, but stated it very plainly, even though his lawyer said you can't rape your wife, yes you can. Look up the whole tea analogy. So again, this is the world this guy is from and lives in. It was because his fucking operation for his hair plugs didn't work out, so he started yelling and screaming at his wife and then raped her after not touching her for like 16 months. This is all her words that she then retracted. She was scared and he just fucking jammed his dick into her, blah, 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 because his hair plugs didn't work out. Nothing fucking real about that guy, including his weird hair. You want to get hair plugs, go for it, but it's not real. Whatever, that's fine. I'm an actor. Most of the time you see me, it's not real. So not that not real is a problem, but don't claim real if you are. If you claim original paint on a car and it's not, you can be sued. So again, we're giving someone the mantle of authentic when he's not. No one really is. I mean, look, no one really is who has half a fucking brain. I mean, the guy retweets from racist, like actual white supremacist neo-Nazi, he'll retweet from that place and then just shrug. That's being supported. That's not on him, man. That's not on him. We shouldn't even know this guy's name. That's on us. That really is on us. So again, that's where it's like, why do I care? Because I live in this world, you know? I do. I live in a world, and if one person goes, wow, I have been caught in a loop of fear. And I'll tell you this, I'm not afraid for the world. What's to be afraid of? You know? What's happening is happening. Climate change. You know, science is in. Deniers can eat a dick. They're all bought and paid for. As I sit in 6-degree weather in the middle of February, January. And again, a warm day in winter is not evidence. A cold day, the trend is, the science is. Point, though, is that that's just a fact. It's what's happening. I'm not afraid of climate change because that's like being afraid of the sunrise. The sun is rising. And usually my fears are based around what's not happening, which isn't any better, by the way. I'm afraid, oh, you know, it's always what's the evidence. I'm afraid I'm never going to make it. No one's going to love me. Okay, well, who knows what making it is, but I got lots of love and I got lots of work, so that's me and my evidence clashing. I am going to play with my new band today. I keep calling them my new band. It's just my band now. I got two, Emmy Rouge and the Startups. TM, don't fucking steal her name before we make an album. So I'm going to go do that, then I'm going to work out, then I'm going to go to bed early to go shoot tomorrow. I'll be curious to see how much I podcast during the shoot. The irony of chatting between takes is when I'm on set, I kind of want to, you know, focus or chill or whatever between takes. Probably not spend a lot of time doing a podcast. Maybe I'll get the guys on as guests who are in the film. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, sometimes it's important for me to just have a legitimate, simple relationship with the people and not promote myself or whatever on their backs. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. Okay, we'll talk to you guys in a little bit. This one's going to be a little shorter today. That's a wrap on Chatting Between Takes.